I'm Will Hedrick.
And I'm Jordan Schaffer.
And this is Dog Years and Timestamps, a book club podcast.
So we all read The Lightning Thief, right?
Yes.
Yes. What'd you think?
That was the series that we read.
The Lightning Thief series.
Mm-hmm.
All About Bast. That would be awesome, dude.
No, I did not read it.
I honestly don't even know. Oh, it's called The Lightning Tree. That's why you didn't read it. We all read The Lightning Tree.
Wasn't Lightning Thief a Percy Jackson
novel? That's what it was. Yes, that was a Percy Jackson novel. I also read those.
I have not read those. I've heard good things.
Yeah, they're cool. It's kind of like the vibe of Harry Potter in the sense of like it's an easy read. It's fun. It's got like a trio, which is a nice amount of people.
Yeah.
At least for a book, it feels like. It seems like shows, the best shows, will have like 5 to 6 cast. I guess Seinfeld only had 4.
Yeah. But the secondary characters were characters that were around all the time.
Yeah, right? They always popped up. Newman.
Yeah, Newman, that's exactly what I was thinking of. You know, he's around all the time just because he's the arch nemesis of, you know, one person.
Newman.
Costanza.
Jerry. Wasn't he Jerry's arch nemesis?
Was it Jerry's arch nemesis? I always think of George being like Newman. But I don't know. I could be misremembering. I know about that show, but I did not watch it as religiously as a lot of people that I know.
Mm. I watched the Friends reunion recently.
Oh, yeah? I heard like that it was sad. That it was just kind of like weird and sad.
Oh, dude, right off the bat, I started crying. I cried like 3 or 4 times. And then end, I was like, oh, that was like, I wasn't crying at the end. Like the very end, I was like, that was nice. It's like a couple shots of the cast doing a table read now of like episodes, like scenes.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's them doing like a live couch talk in front of like an audience. And then it's like a video of them walking in to their old set. It's just, I don't know, it's really sweet. And then them hanging out and they play some games and they bring a lot of the old people back that were on the show, like Tom Selleck, who was Monica's boyfriend, Richard. And I don't know. It was really good. I cried a lot, but it wasn't what I was expecting either, which is fine. But for some reason, I was expecting like some reunion stuff where they'd like obviously have flashbacks and they'd be talking about what was going on and what they've been doing and then like stuff that we've always wanted to ask, but we haven't had them all together again. And then they'd do like a table read maybe of a new episode. But as far as like everyone there was concerned, like the series was over and they ended it perfect, you know, like because it was about them all being friends. And then once like they all kind of had their bigger lives to go off to, Monica and Chandler just had twins. And then Rachel was going to move and then she didn't. But like her and Ross are doing their thing with their kids. I don't know. Like everyone had their kids and like it changed the focus and center of everyone's life from being their group of friends to like their own lives. And it was just like that was their idea for the ending. I was like, oh, that's sweet. And I learned some stuff about Friends, which was cool. And it was good. I would recommend if you were a fan of the show to watch that.
That's good.
This is Friends Cast.
Friends Cast. We're now Friends Cast. We don't read anymore.
Yeah. I love it. But what'd you think of the book? How was it revisiting our old buddy Locke?
It's nice being back with Locke and Jean and
Jean.
This interesting world of like mystery, all the Elden Glass stuff. Like, what is it? Why is it impenetrable? Why is it so old? Why does nobody know what its purpose is? And you know, how do people build cities out of it and stuff like that? And like Tal Farrar, where they are now, is even more Elden Glass than Camor had been. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the entire bedrock is Elden Glass or something like that.
Yeah, like how did they
like make part of a planet like, you know, this ridiculous material that nobody today can possibly understand anything about.
Yeah, it's effectively diamonds. Everything's made of diamonds.
It's crazy. Like even the seafloor is like shaped Elden Glass that creates a reef so that the waters aren't so crazy as it gets closer to the city, which is all on the water. It's just nuts, you know.
Yeah,
it's the kind of fantasy technology and architecture and things like that that is the best kind. It's like Lord of the Rings kind where like they step into, you know, the hall in Moria. There's a specific name that I can't think of right now. And it's just like the giant pillars or whatever. And it's like a crazy huge hall. Yeah. And you just kind of look at it, the scale of it. And you think like, what the fuck? Like, how would you do this? You know?
And why would you make it that big? Right? Like there's gotta be a reason for it to be that big. It was just to show off. Yeah. Yeah. Or was it because
it's just to the glory of your people, you know, it's the dwarves are like, we're really good at building shit. So and this is our crown jewel is this city, you know?
And let's make it really tall, too, because we don't have to, but we will.
The Duero Delph? Is that what I was thinking about? Anyways.
Dúnedain. No, I'm kidding. Like, you forgot that.
But it's that kind of, like, you know, awe in a setting that I really appreciate in fantasy novels whenever they do it right. Because there was like cool stuff in Aragon, mm-hmm. but it did just seem like standard fantasy setting for a video game one.
Yes.
You know, like it was just, there was trees and there were cities, but like no plumbing. You know, like it was almost like a medieval story that had magic in it. You know, like a King Arthur tale or whatever, where there wasn't like some kind of like insane fantasy kind of thing, you know, like an eight-headed dragon or something. You know?
I don't explicitly remember trees in the Crystal World. What's it called again?
The Elden Glass?
Yeah.
Or Elder Glass?
Yeah.
I think it's Elder Glass.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of...
like if it's all in the water.
Different situations. Wasn't there a time where Locke was walking through a park last book and he got accosted in some way by the gray thief or whatever who ended up being the main bad guy?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the bedrock there wasn't Elder Glass. I don't know.
Well, if this was the... that cool Reddit post you were talking about the other day where the guy was looking for an anime without trees.
Oh my God, dude. I'm obsessed with that fucking post. I keep checking on it to see what's going on. That post, for some reason, just fascinates me.
Has it blown up or is it like a little niche of the internet just for you? Like me in the comments on Amazon?
I think it's a little niche of the internet for me. I don't know because no one else that I know has heard about it or bothered to look into it beyond me just saying like, can you believe this post? This is crazy. For context, somebody posted a question in r/anime and it was just a question. Are there anime suggestions for shows that don't have trees in them? If there was no vegetation at all, that would be best. But if there just isn't any trees, I think that I'll be able to get by. And I just thought, what is this dude's problem with trees?
Yeah,
or like, gal's problem. It's like, what is this person's problem with trees?
Yeah, like, why is that? The trees normally don't have anything to do with the storyline. So, like, why is that such a crucial part to
them? And I started digging into the comments to see if, because surely other people were thinking that too. Because it was just such a bizarrely specific request. And people were asking like what's up with trees or and stuff like that. And anytime somebody asked a question about the tree preference, that person, the original poster, would not respond. But anytime somebody provided suggestions, that person would respond. So they were specifically avoiding the tree situation. They just wanted a show that didn't have trees in it. Oh, and they also provided a link in the original post that said, here's a list of everything that I've watched. So, like, you know, if you had a suggestion, I guess you could cross-check and be like, oh, he's already seen that one. But in one of the comments I saw, he said something like, I've seen over, like, 300 different anime. And so, like, some of these stuff, you know, unfortunately, I've seen already. Thank you, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, so you provided a list expecting people to cross-check, but that list is 300 items long? Fuck you. I'm not checking that list. I'm making my suggestions and I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, it's for sure not a list of 300 shows without trees in them either.
Yeah, because that would be truly impressive. I would come back around on my opinion of this person, but it's just weird. This Reddit post fascinates me, and I keep checking in on it to see if there's anything, you know, substantially different. They're very active in r/anime. I also looked at their post history. They're constantly commenting in r/anime. Anyway.
Thanks. So they're in the culture. They just can't find what they want.
They've seen all the anime that doesn't have trees already. It's just so bizarre. It's such a weird thing to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And if they make this book, though, into an anime, then maybe.
Maybe no trees.
Yeah. Now I'm going to be paying attention to all the next sections for trees. Well, so what I did, like, when I was reading, I kind of did I read the wiki of plot summary of the first book, and then I started reading the wiki of the second plot, and, like, as I got to a point when I didn't recognize what was going on anymore, I just very lightly skimmed it, like, I read it quickly, so, like, I could kind of get maybe the gist of what was going on, because, like, I did that before I finished listening to everything. And then as I was listening, I was like, I'm glad I did that. Cause now I see like the steps that they're putting forward to like get this, some of their plans going. Cause, I don't know. Since I haven't read this series before, it's not like I'm reading something as complicated as like The Name of the Wind and learning all these new things for the first time, or I'm not revisiting all these things. I'm learning them for the first time again here. And so, like, having that little baby outline was nice for me, like, just because I was able to piece things together. just easier. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like I'm learning that I'm not the best listener and I've been listening to the books for this whole podcast. I'm like, damn, I need to, I don't know, focus harder or whatever, mm-hmm. but
it's really easy to let the listening fade mm-hmm. into the background of whatever it is that you're doing. So,
yeah, but I mean, it helped me a lot and I feel like it was nice to remember everything that happened in the first book too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I had forgotten a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. I'm still remembering things here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're relatively complicated stories being told just because it's the nature of it's heist stuff, right?
Yeah,
it's like
Ocean's
11 where everything is crazy and you wouldn't ever expect it, you know,
mm-hmm.
first time around. It's a lot to try to absorb. And I think that this one's a little bit more confusing than Loch Lomora.
Mm-hmm.
Because time, like they're doing the back and forth like they did in Loch Lomora periodically in times, you know, like a chapter in the present, a chapter in the past and back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one, the past chapters are directly related to whatever it is that's happening in the big, play that they're making.
Yeah.
Whereas last time it was like, we're just using these past chapters to learn about characters mm-hmm. and a little bit of context as to, you know, like why they're on their own now, Chains is dead or whatever.
Yeah.
And so forth and so on. Now we're getting two different timelines for the exact same plot, which is kind of, it's just an extra level
mm-hmm.
of paying attention for sure.
Yeah. I think sometimes I've misunderstood like exactly what was happening when, cause like they went through like the period of Locke being like in grieving still, but it's, mm-hmm. it's been like 2 years since then.
For the present, yeah.
For the present, yeah. And then so I thought that grieving period or whatever was, he was still grieving after that
long. 2 years or whatever,
and I was like,
yeah.
Damn, man, like it's...
It's like a two-month period.
Yeah, and I honestly really liked that scene just with him and Jean, just like basically being like his older brother, being like, get over your, like...
Oh, right, yeah.
Get out of this mess because I can't do this alone and I need you. And he basically becomes like the... the Kappa Bar. Wait, who's the one that Kappa Raza or whatever from the first one that like ran the whole thing at the end and then he got killed?
Mm-hmm.
And fuck, who was the guy that won at the end? Nobody?
I don't think anybody becomes the new Kappa.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, they've.
That we
you know. Kimura's got to figure that out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Locke and Jean flee from Kimura because they fucked over the spider
mm-hmm.
in their, you know, use of the spider against the Gray Pilgrim or whatever. Not the Gray Pilgrim, that's Gandalf, but the Gray Fox or no, that's,
yeah, that sounds that's closer. Fucking,
Gray Fox is the name of the Master Thief in Oblivion.
it's Gray something though.
It's like Gray Thief or something, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's the one that ends up being like the real bad guy. He wants to kill Barsavi.
Mm-hmm.
And in so doing, he kind of fucks over Locke, and so Locke's like, well, I'm going to fuck you over now.
Mm-hmm.
And but then they kind of fuck over the spider while they're doing that and have to escape.
Yeah. I also forgot, like, the... Like, I remembered the mages or whatever, because we talked about those last time.
Uh-huh.
But I forgot the naming in this book. Like, it's just straight up, like, your name.
mm-hmm.
Like, but Locke doesn't know his name. His was one that he was either, like, he gave himself or, like... was given, but it wasn't like his birth name. It's just, it's interesting to me to think like it's either, I mean, it's the name that you were given by your parents, I guess. Like, do your parents, what if your parents don't have a name for you? Then like, is the first name that you take
maybe that's why
your
he's
name?
The best thief ever is
because he doesn't
his
have
parents
a name.
Knew they were like, let's not give him a name.
Yeah.
And then he'll be the best thief ever.
They're trying to raise him to be like the best ninja, and he goes right, and he just becomes a thief. just becomes a thief. I say that like it's a little thing. Like in this world, it's almost like prestigious to be a thief. Like
right, yeah.
Rereading
in both cities that we've spent any real time in,
mm-hmm.
it's a whole industry.
I guess that's like the gangster industry, like in our world. You know,
that would be the equivalent, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like the big money, big schemes, like double crossing and plots and. A bunch of words that we're learning. Because it's like, I didn't know that that's what that was.
Right. It really leans on the lingo in these books, mm-hmm. which is fun.
Yeah.
Because it's not necessarily dumb lingo, like, okay, you had to make that up. Like, like it, it At the very least, it's all believable lingo. If it's not, you know, relatively accurate, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be difficult to find to research that kind of stuff. Sometimes whenever people come up with lingo for books, I'm like, that was stupid.
Yeah, like, how old was that word? Or like, thesaurus. That's right. All you use that.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, it's been fun, though, getting back with Locke, like, and Jean. It kind of feels like we're building a new base level, but not necessarily like a new squad yet. Right? Because isn't it still just Locke and Jean?
Yeah.
And they're stealing at, like, well, at the casinos. Yeah. I was about to say at the gambling place. and
at the Sin Spire.
Yeah. And stealing there is, like, punishable by death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and they do it anyway. And then.
Because they want to steal all his money. So their idea is to steal from him steal from other gamblers.
Mm-hmm.
To be successful enough at gambling to move up in the tiers of the Sin Spire,
mm-hmm.
to more prestigious, expensive, like, buy-in tables and bullshit,
mm-hmm.
and get his attention. And then whenever they finally get his attention, Locke then is like, hey, I've been stealing from you.
Yeah, that way he'll be like, oh, well.
Yeah, it's like how he gets closer to them,
mm-hmm.
so that they can figure out how to steal all his money from the vault. But I'm not convinced that stealing from the vault is their end game anyways.
Okay.
There's got to be something else going on, right?
Probably.
There always is.
Yeah.
And now there's also the added complication with the Archon, who's poisoned them.
Exactly.
And it's
what I was
like,
thinking.
I'm going to need you to go do something, mm-hmm. you know, do some stuff for me. I haven't figured out exactly what it is, and then I'll give you the antidote. So they're doing both things at the same time, and right now they're seemingly unrelated. But it wouldn't surprise me if at the end, like, we get a reminiscence chapter that's like, and that's how we wrote the Archon into it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of them is going to make him do the boat stuff, like one of those two.
Mm-hmm. Whenever I was first reading and I got further than we've gotten at mm-hmm. this point, so I know a little bit of what happens next week.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get on the boat that's on the cover of the book, you know.
Nice. Weren't we on the boat like at the very first section of the book when I started
listening?
That was
the
again,
boat that they leave.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's what it was. Okay, yeah. Okay,
and they arrive at a small, like, island that's on, like, the outer areas of Telferar or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Locke stays, like, drunk for forever.
Yeah. What book were we reading that, like, in order to, like, gain their trust, they were on a boat and he was going to fight the ship captain or whatever, and he, like, challenged him to a fight in front of everybody, and then he was going to lose, but, like...
Oh, wasn't that Devil in Darkwater? That Stuart, yeah. the second Stuart Turtenaw that we read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have fused that scene into this book.
Yeah.
So frequently, I'm just like, that happened in this.
Of course it did.
And we're on boats. And I keep doing that, though. I keep fusing other scenes from other things that we've read into this one, because they're, like, we read this first one a while ago, so
mm-hmm.
me pulling back from the memory banks, like, we're probably reading that book also. No, we read that one a little more recently, but maybe we're reading
some other ones
January that I'm flashing back
something.
To from that time.
Yeah, probably. It wouldn't be surprising. Because, yeah, it's been so long, 2 years maybe, since we read Locke Lamora.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're
not in the mindset of it like we have been with the other series that we've continued on with.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're still in that play fantasy universe of, like, magic and naming. And so I think it's easy for me to just be like, oh, that's from this too. And
right.
Yeah. And then the boat scenes, I was just like, because that seems like such a Jean thing to do. Like, I'll threaten you, Captain, I'm the one with the reputation. But
well,
then
he does that
you,
in this book with whenever they're in the first place during Reminiscence, when Locke's being shitty. Jean's like, well, we need to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes and, like, takes over a gang.
Yeah.
And he beats the shit out of them and then gets them to be, like, you know, his boys or whatever. And then they're like, hey, some other gang's fucking with us. So he goes and beats the shit out of them.
That was awesome. I remember that. And then Locke was like, you're just replacing all our old friends. And he's like, fuck you. Basically, right. Locks him in his room and he's like, get out.
Yeah.
See if you can. It's like, I don't have the key. It's like, dude, what have we been doing for the last,
I know, right?
Like,
what
our
are
entire
our fucking lives?
Lives,
yeah.
I love that it's a thing that they always say that, like, I think Camor,
yeah, Camorr.
I think they always bring it up, but, like, everywhere, like, food is such a big deal over there.
Oh yeah.
That, like, even the gentleman bastards all know, like, how to cook and like fine dining and stuff. I always think that's funny. And then the Astor Charlin, what is it? Astor Charlin brandy again?
Yeah. Astor Charlin.
Yeah, that came back up.
Mm-hmm. That was a little bit. He tries to give it to the guild master of the, what do they call him? Not Arcanist, obviously.
For some reason, I thought it was a woman.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, okay. She is the one that like made the fortress, like made the
vault.
The vault, yeah.
Rickon's vault, yeah. God, what was... I don't know, whatever.
Oh, the reason I brought up names, though, I feel like they probably left Camor as immediately as well because they knew Jean's true name, or they knew that Jean was his real name.
Mm-hmm.
And they could, and like the mages or whatever could control him. And I feel like distance probably matters, you know? So like if they got away further, And then so they're poisoned. Let's go back to that. They're poisoned. They got tricked into drinking this poison. That's just like the perfect poison. It doesn't affect
you
at all.
It's so perfect that it almost has to be a bluff, right? Like that's my prediction, is that it's not real.
Oh, that would be nice.
But you know, like them, you can't really afford to just assume that.
It's exactly what he says too. He's like, well, if it's a bluff, I mean, you should treat it the same, right? And they're like, I guess.
Right. But yeah, it's just such a perfect poison. It's a little stupid.
I like imagining us as them.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you would do what Locke did and like lock yourself away and drink your sadness from losing all our friends, but like for some reason I just think of me as
that is my signature move.
But well, I mean, I'm not saying you would do that in this situation, but like, because obviously Locke's the leader of this little like squad, but like but that's what I'm saying. Like I see, and it's funny too because Locke's a redhead and Jean's probably like got black hair. And I don't know, it's just funny. Like I feel like I would be more Jean and you'd be more
I think
Locke.
Jean does have black hair. I think they were talking about it. As part of their current disguise. Right now, Locke's hair is blonde, but they dyed it that way to match his character or whatever. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
Is Locke redheaded? Sabathos like... redheaded. The girl?
Oh, yeah.
They keep mentioning that.
For some reason, I thought he was redheaded, but maybe that was a disguise he wore in the first one. Who knows?
I can't remember.
What he looks like.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the mystery.
Does he know?
Yeah. He's just like an amorphous.
Do we
like...
even know who you are?
No, he doesn't know his own name. He's lost. What if he figures out his own name and, like, goes Super Saiyan? Like, he awakens. He's
yeah,
like, oh,
right.
I'm the best thief. I am Kappa. Kappa Locke? That's lame. Kappa Lamora? That'd
be
better.
Yeah, I guess that's what it would be. It'd be your last name, typically.
Oh, what was his name before? He was the something of Camor. The
Thorn of Camor.
Yeah, dude, that was a cool fucking nickname, dude. The Thorn of Camor.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one.
Yeah, dude, because it's like no matter how big you are, a thorn in like in you is annoying. It's like it hurts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a big deal.
Yeah,
it's like the lion with the thorn in his paw is always like the trope for that.
Because isn't like the point of like the lion with the thorn in his paw that, you know, he gets a mouse to help him out by like lying to him that he won't eat him if he helps him out, and he promises he won't ever if he sees him again or something like that. But then he just does anyway.
Oh, I thought that was that probably is the real story.
I can't remember.
I thought they were
friends. I feel like that's
afterwards.
How it actually happens. Maybe there's like a really nice like baby version.
That's probably the one I heard where they're friends afterwards. The one, the thing that makes me think of your story is the like the scorpion and the turtle. It might not be a turtle, but it was like the scorpion and the frog. That's what it was. And like, I don't remember why they were going to work together, but the scorpion basically like needs to get across the river. And the frog was like, well, I can help you, but you can't sting me. And the scorpion's like, okay. And then when they're in the middle of the river, he can't help himself and he stings him. And then they both die. I don't remember what the point of that story was. But it's like,
like
I guess it's...
You know, because he brings them both down, right? Like,
right,
you know, basically murders himself in addition to the...
Like, you can't... I think it's you can't fight your own nature, maybe. Because the
something
scorpion
like
couldn't
that,
help
yeah.
itself. It had to attack.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, I think that was, like, the moral... That sounds like a Japanese version. Like, a very hardcore moralistic, like,
right.
You cannot help your nature.
I think that, yeah, I was thinking about something, and right as I was about to say it, I lost it. Doesn't matter.
Well, so we might or might not be poisoned, and the poison, what are they doing? Drinking like a baby antidote that's like just, is it like the full antidote but laced with more poison so like it cures them but then they keep going,
right.
You know?
I don't know, you know, why we're really supposed to, I feel like we haven't been given any proper reason to believe that. I think that what the Archon says is just like, it's a latent poison,
mm-hmm.
And it takes time to have its effect. But you can stave it off with this until you've had enough of it that you no longer have, or like it takes a long time for the poison to work its way out of you or whatever.
Oh.
So maybe the antidote is just like keeping the bad stuff from happening, but your body still has to work it out of your system. And so you just have to take the antidote until it's no longer in your system. I guess that's what it is, but it doesn't say that.
Yeah.
I've only just now put that together as a possible explanation.
Okay. My inference was that, like, they drank this poison. It was a magic poison that, like, you wouldn't start feeling the effects of it in, for, like, a month or two. But, like, once you started feeling the effects, it was too late and you couldn't get it out of your body. And then... Now, the antidote part is the one I don't understand, because it's like, it's almost like a half antidote, it sounds like, because it's like only, it's like, maybe they made it under the way I'm justifying it is like the way we take antibiotics, like you have to take the full bottle so that it kills it off completely. Like he's just giving you like half a bottle of antibiotics, so it's killing it off a little bit, but it still comes back, you know, like it never kills it off completely.
Right.
But it'll keep it from, it'll keep the side effects from ever becoming like... Before you start showing side effects is what I meant to say.
Okay. Yeah.
And and so, and then there's the full cure that he can give them later that he's like holding hostage. Like,
yeah, I suppose so. He says it in a weird way. He says something like, you know, I'll give you just enough antidote so that it doesn't get you until the job is done.
And then it'll get you.
I think he like says just enough antidote. I think he uses like that phrasing, which is just, I don't know. It just sounds weird.
And honestly, if Jean is such a good alchemist, like they make him out to be, because wasn't he teaching like the new kids alchemy that he just got on his crew?
I think just like some basic stuff that, you know, they could use very easily to, you know, I don't know, I'm going to come up with a random example, like, you know, dissolve a lock or something like that, you know, something like simple and small that requires, you know, easy to grab ingredients, you know, that you could probably find like, you know, outside. That was my assumption. It doesn't say any of that, but I assume that's if he was only there for 2 months.
Was he the alchemist of like Locke's group though before?
I don't remember that being a part of his character. I feel like they worked with people that did that stuff, like they, you know, had guys.
Yeah, what did the twins do? They were like kind of, they did a little bit of everything, but maybe like jack of all trades, master of none.
I don't remember a lot about some of their individual traits.
Yeah.
Aside from Locke, obviously, comes up with everything. Mm-hmm. He's got, like, you know, the savant brain.
Yeah. And he always has the Hail Mary plans. Jean's,
like, the muscle.
Yeah. But, like, not stupid. They very clearly
make that clear
a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, we get it.
Yeah, he's certainly just as capable in everything else, but he is definitely the muscle. I think that Kylo and Galdo, were they better at
They probably were great in disguise.
Like, cards or something that. I feel like they were like better with like handwork.
It might also just have to be the fact too that they're twins, so they could like be the same person, or or like maybe they were great in combo with each other.
I think that they do it a couple of times in the first one.
Yeah,
when they're playing the different characters, I think that they each play each other at different points when they need to. God,
that's such a fun character to have killed off, like a character said to have killed off.
Right.
I mean, I'm not judging Scott Lynch.
Yes.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. I'm not judging him for that choice by any means, because that's like a very bold, brave narrative choice to kill off really cool side characters. But like, because it feels like Jean is almost immune to it, but I'm not writing it off. Like Jean could die in the third or fourth book or this book. I really don't know. But like, I feel like Jean and Locke are the two. Like,
yeah.
We're not going to lose
almost
them.
Certainly.
We might lose the girl that we've never met. She might already be dead.
Yeah. Like, I'm trying to remember what we talked about when we were reading Lachlan Moore. And I'm, I don't think that I had an idea back then, and I don't have an idea right now. But like, do we ever meet Sabitha? Does she just continue to be a thing that Jean brings up whenever he needs to annoy Locke about something?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, whatever. Like, that's fine. But I feel like I want to meet Sabitha.
Yeah, and this is also during an era where it's like you can't hit her up on Facebook. You know, we don't even know if she's necessarily alive still. So that would be such a bad twist if we just like find out later she's dead.
Yeah,
that's it.
Right.
Like we never meet her.
Like, oh, well, she just didn't want to write Sabitha, I guess.
She shows up in the last book and they're like, where have you been the whole time? We could have used your help.
Because there's like 7 or 8 books already, right?
There's a few books. I think it's a 7-part series.
In total?
Yeah, but I for some reason think that it's not done. I don't know
why. I remember that it's not finished.
Yeah, but I have a feeling he's on like number 5, like Game of Thrones or something. always comes back to Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings.
Right, yeah.
And also Harry Potter and Name of the Wind. I brought them all up. The Fearsome Four. Fantastic Four. That would have been
Fantastic
better.
Fantastic Four. Yeah, it's a 7-book series and 4 have been published at this point.
Damn. Okay, and this one came out like 07 or 08, right? Didn't the first one come out like 04 since 08?
The first book, The Lies of Lacamora, was published in June of 2006.
Damn.
Red Seas was published in 2007.
Okay.
Next up is Republic of Thieves in 2013. So that was a big time jump. That was a 5, almost 6-year time jump.
If the fourth one came out in 2019, I'm going to be pissed.
Thorn of Imberlin came out. Wait, has it come out?
Oh my
gosh. I don't think it has come out yet. It just has a wiki entry because they have stuff to say about it. Yeah, it hasn't come out yet. The first draft was completed in May of 2019.
Dang it. That's what I just said.
I guess we have to imagine that it's going to be coming out here in the next year-ish. So hopefully we'll be seeing it sooner than later.
Yeah. I mean,
that means that there's only one more to read at this point in the series.
We know what the next book is. No, I'm kidding. Right.
It's doing like the other ones that we talk about taking forever.
It's almost like I wonder if Harry Potter didn't have the movies behind him, if she would have gotten him out that quick.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about.
I'm glad she did. I mean, she's probably glad she did too.
I feel like the pressure was different then. Like, it's not the same kind of pressure that it is now.
She probably created the pressure,
so,
though.
Yeah, maybe so. Sort of like, look, this person wrote 7 damn books.
Yeah.
In pretty consistent time frames. Mm-hmm. Which is probably why there's as many weird issues with them as, you know, we talked about when we were analyzing play. Probably because she was cranking that shit out comparatively.
Yeah, she had to.
To other people.
I feel like the fifth book came out when the first movie came out. Or maybe around that time.
That sounds about right. I can't remember when the movies came out.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe it was like Goblet of Fire had just been released and then they were like, we're going to make a movie.
That's when I remember it being on my radar.
Goblet of Fire,
Goblet of Fire.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to know. Like, you think Scott Lynch is waiting for his HBO deal or whatever?
When we were first looking into the series and looking at shit, like, I feel like I remember seeing that there was some talks happening with, like, I don't know, Amazon Prime or, you know, one of these video providers these days. And now there's twice as many streaming services as there was when we were first talking about it. Now Disney Plus and Apple TV and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, maybe.
It's brave.
It doesn't have as much attention as other series do.
Yeah.
I feel like I had heard about this just because a friend recommended it to me forever ago.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be a good excuse to finally read it if we did it for the podcast. I haven't heard about it otherwise.
But we find ourselves in a similar position with The Name of the Wind.
It's another series that we can't finish.
I cannot call that series anything but The Name of the Wind series. I know that's not what it's called.
Right.
It's
I think
Killer
a lot
Chronicles,
of people do that with series whenever there's... like a first, entry into it, and it's as iconic as I'm sure The Name of the Wind was.
The Sorcerer's Stone series.
The Sorcerer's, right, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, it makes more sense because they're always looking for the Name of the Wind. Like, that's kind of the underlying big aha moment in the book. He, like, sees Ben called The Name of the Wind, and then he wants to go after it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also supposed to be, I think, an allegory for, Kvothe's life, where it's the name of the wind. It's ever-changing. You're not going to find it. You know,
you can't
catch that.
Yeah, that's
it's
why
about,
you have to
like,
listen for it.
Whatever it
go.
Is that he's looking for, he can't find it, because it's ever-changing, whatever it is. And it's, also congruous with Dina always changing her identity and leaving. He can't find her and blah, blah, blah. And so it's... I think that that's the intended similarity there. And so, with that being like the underlining idea, like you've said, it makes sense that you would just call it the Name of the Wind series.
Yeah. The Quit Looking So Hard books.
Right. Yeah. Quit Looking So Hard books.
I'm trying to think what else happened because, like, we hit some big points, and I feel like what else?
There's that reminiscence chapter where Locke spends like 3 months in another city outside of Tel'Varar. Because he's getting a couple of chairs made, very specifically, like overly crazily complicated chairs made for some reason, for some purpose that we don't yet know.
And Scott Lynch was into chairs at that point, so he had to write a thing about it.
And it's an extremely detailed chapter about these damn chairs. And so, like, we know that it's something to do with the game that they're playing. It's got something to do with Rakeen, I guess, but... Yeah, that guy. Like, it's got something to do with him. He's mm-hmm. going to gift him these two chairs, and the chairs are going to assist them in the theft somehow.
I don't know. They're those chairs that grab onto you and you can't move.
Right.
Or they're filled with guns and they shoot them.
He just chains down everybody in the Sinspire. That's how he's going to get the fucking stuff. Just immobilize everybody.
If you ever want to move again, give me the antidote. I'll pull my antidote out of the chair. Oh, didn't they talk about a Bezoar in this? A Bezoar?
I missed that.
Oh, I swear I heard that in one of the pieces I just read, and they were just like, they pretty much said, like, those are fake.
Okay.
Those are just pretend.
Hmm.
Yeah, so those fancy chairs, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's the super Stephen King move to spend a fuck ton of time on something very specific and then never to bring it up until it, like, really, really matters. Right.
Yeah, it's obviously going to come up again at some point.
Yeah. If you want, sometime in the show, we should read that Stephen King, his fantasy novel that's actually, like, trying to be a medieval fantasy novel. Mm-hmm. It has something like that in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, then we'll have to consider that for sure.
Yeah.
There's the last one that we read. They decide they're going to go cliff climbing because I guess maybe it's part of Locke getting back into shape and stuff like that. And somebody tries to kill them for their stuff or whatever, and they have to get through that situation. I don't know how that really plays into anything. Well, no, they were cliff climbing because they were scoping something out. Mm-hmm. Like, it's part of their plan, and they needed to test that they could do it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, chairs, ropes on cliffs. That's part of the plan so far.
Yeah, something to do with Jean, like Jean's name and Locke's name, like mattering.
Bond's Magi, I think. Like, isn't that part of their ability to do magic, is if they know names, it is something that they're able to utilize. I think it's part of the magic. Because they're the only ones that ever mention it, or the Bond's Magi. And the only time that Jean and Locke mention it is whenever they're talking about the Bond's Magi.
Yeah, I just don't want to forget that they're looking for him.
Yeah, that's obviously, I think that's the series through line, right?
Oh, okay.
I think that's the big story throughout the Seven. It'll come up again in this book, but I don't think that's what everything's twisting on this book.
Mm-hmm.
I think the individual books or individual adventures with the through line being their conflict with the Bond's Magi.
Mm-hmm. The name of the book implies that we're going to be on a boat for a while.
Yeah.
But we haven't.
Should be a great deal of seafaring.
Yes, I'm excited for that because our boys don't know anything about that, do they?
No.
Yeah.
There is a chapter coming up where they spend a lot of effort learning about
it. Oh, cool. Okay, good.
Because they have to.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I know I'll probably learn some stuff about it. Like, we all pee in this bucket to separate it into ammonia, and you can clean the whole of the ship with that. Is that a thing? I heard that once.
Sure. Oh. I don't know.
Yeah, I heard that.
It does feel like something that I've heard, you know, like sort of, like, well, of course this makes sense in theory.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, an actual scientist gets in there and is like, no.
How do they have enough food to make a voyage? Because, like, I know eggs, you can keep eggs. Like, if you just pull them straight from the chicken and, like, you don't wash them.
Yeah.
Like, they'll keep for months, like 3 months, I think. So, like, okay, that makes sense. I think
people also ate a lot of bad food back then. Like, fruits.
Eggs, dried meat.
The kind of, like, fruit bruising that we throw away today did not happen back then. I'm sure.
For sure.
We're like, some, like, you know, I don't mind eating a little bit of bruised fruit. It's not that big of a deal unless it's, like, half the apple, you know. Then I'm like, well, this is clearly bad. But if it's even, like, you know, a fifth of the apple, I'll be like, I'll just eat it, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah.
But there are people that are like, nope.
Yeah. You
know, the availability of stuff and the frequency with which it can be bought, because you just go to the store now as opposed to, yeah, being on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
Or even not being on a boat. There's not always, like, you know, stores. You can't 24-hour Walmart.
Yeah. I mean, when you go on a voyage, like, it'd be different. Like, it's not called a voyage on a boat. When you go on a boat or, like walk through the wilderness, I mean, you know what I'm trying to mm-hmm. say? Like, either way that you're traveling, you can bring something to collect food on the way. Like, you could bring nets and fishing gear to maybe catch some fish while you're out there. I don't know how you would continually supply wood, except for maybe pulling up driftwood from the ocean and then, like, having wood stored on the boat and just trying to be really efficient with it, your fire.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe coals are a big thing. Like, maybe they make a bunch of coals before they bring, and then you bring coals onto your boat because they're easier to store, easier to keep a flame going. Mm-hmm.
It's all just that kind of provisioning.
That's so interesting to me, thinking about a boat.
It's like a whole industry.
Yeah.
Back, I mean, I guess it probably still is, but...
I know with yachts it is. Like, if you own a super big yacht there, you have to pay people pretty much full-time to live there and take care of it.
Yachts are stupid expensive to just to own.
Yeah.
Not even the initial price tag.
Yeah, Conor McGregor's, like, $2.5 million yacht or whatever. I'm pretty sure he's, like... has to employ like 20 people all the time to
because you can't let it sit.
His boat. Yeah,
it's not like a tiny boat that you can do some easy maintenance in your fucking driveway. You know? Yeah, it's not like that.
Yeah, it's basically their boat that Connor wants to use sometimes. Right, that Connor pays for.
Yeah, right. I had heard a story from somebody at some point, so who fucking knows, right? But they were talking with somebody that owned a yacht, and they were like, "Oh, so do you like?" Travel with it or anything like that?" And they're like, "Oh god, no. It costs like a couple $100,000 just to get it up the coast. The fuel's cost." He's like, "No, yeah, we don't really do anything with it. Like maybe once every like 6 or 7 years we decide that's like vacation time or something, but no, it stays in dock. We just party on it."
On it. That's our party building basically, but it's on the water. That's insane to me.
Especially for those like super yachts, like the ones that, you know, like
I'm thinking like a personal cruise ship.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like but when you say that, like $100,000.
Like Jerry Jones has like a stupid yacht that he lived on during quarantine.
But dude, $100,000, $200,000 to go up and down the coast, like how do cruises make any money?
They just make a shit ton of money. I don't know.
Must just charge enough, yeah.
I think that, like, cruise ships are also large enough to house supplementary alternative forms of energy, right? Like, they could have some, you know, solar panels to help offset some electricity stuff.
Yeah.
They could probably get some hydro electricity going to, not to substitute, but to, you know, supplement, just to make that burden a little bit easier, I guess. I don't know how much that translates into numbers and dollars, but I would imagine that if you've got something that big that could house those kinds of facilities, why wouldn't you do that as well? You know?
the Tesla yacht is hydro-powered. No, that'd be legit, but it's collecting the sun that's reflecting from the water and using the water as power.
Double solar power. That's like people are like, you got to put on sunscreen whenever you're going skiing because that sun reflects off the snow. And I'm like, whatever, dad.
I'm just trying to get a tan under my nose without having a dumb mirror. I never understood that when I was little. And I was like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, it's like under your chin and shit. It's so funny.
All right. Well, let's think back to our guys, Jean and Luc. Or
Jean-Luc Picard. Yeah. The USS Enterprise.
Jean and Locke. Yeah, that's kind of... So, yeah, they're just the only other through line thing that I can think of is they may or may not be poisoned, but they're under the impression that they are. And it seems like it seems like this is such a specific poison too that like how have they not heard of it? Like the Plumbobbin.
Well, he says it's proprietary, so he had somebody make it. The Archon does.
Oh, so it's brand new. Okay.
Yeah, so it's not something that's widely used on like the black market, but the Archon has, you know, as much money as anybody else in the world.
You should be flattered. He spent a lot.
Right.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's probably real.
Yeah, it's believably real. It's like he says, you know, I have the resources to not
to
have
do this.
To bluff.
Yeah.
And it also is just a plot device. Mm-hmm. The poison is just a means of getting them involved with the Archon against their will during the time that they're doing this already insanely complicated game.
Yeah.
You know, if the plot is like we're doing the crazy thing, but we also need a wrench in the system and it's going to be them having to deal with the other power in Tal Verar. But they wouldn't do that willingly. What do? Oh, we poison them. Yeah. We've done it to Locke before. So.
Yeah. Old news. Yeah. That, I guess those are the only big plot lines that we know so far.
That's pretty much all that's happened.
Yeah.
The artifice of the city is nuts. All the shit that the Archon has is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The bugs in his office that are fake and flapping, you know, fluttering in like the stupid like wind that's pushed up through pipes in like the basement and he's like on the 8th floor or something like that. You know, it's just like unreasonable shit.
Look,
and then
rich
the weird like river that they go on in one of the chapters whenever he wants to talk to Locke privately. It's like an indoor river that's a part of his estate. that goes through like a magic room that simulates a storm. It's nuts, dude.
It's like Walt Disney if he was still alive.
Right, yeah. He really is. It's sort of, yeah, it's almost kind of like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory-esque as well. You know, it's just the extravagance of, mm-hmm. you know, these people that have money. And I think it's done to illustrate the disparity in classes in this mm-hmm. world, which is why Locke exists in the way that he does, being at the bottom of society, but taking everything from the top of society. Like, that's, you know,
Robin Hood.
Part of why he likes the game so much and why they have to do it, because mm-hmm. they can't stop themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, and, well, how much are we reading next week?
We're going to stop at 11. Title is All Else, Truth. So we're going to read another 5 chapters, something like that, 6, 7, 9, 10.
All right.
180-ish pages.
Hell yeah. All right, well, you guys know how to find us, anchor.fm/ears-stamps, and links to our social media you can find there. But just so you know, it is also on Instagram and Twitter, ears_stamps.
Yes.
And then dogearsandtimestamps@gmail.com if you'd like to email us directly. Special shout out to Ashley Valle for editing the podcast. Thank you, Ashley. You keep it going.
Yeah. Do it.
Do it.
So I don't have to.
And yeah, we're growing. We're growing, man. Literally.
Are we?
Well, we literally did. Yeah, another person.
We are literally. Oh, you just mean like the organization. I was thinking you meant literally, like, you know, we're humans and time passes. And I thought, wow, that's a really odd thing to reference.
Well, you got my double meaning. I am also that deep.
Yeah, talk to us or whatever on those things. We'll see y'all next week. Again, up to chapter 11. I'm Will Hedrick.
I'm Jordan Schaffer.
This is Dog Ears and Timestamps.